Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in show. I'm Sarah LaDuke, in for Ray Graff this afternoon. Our guest is Dr. Soon Park, a surgical director of cardiovascular services at Albany Medical Center. Dr. Park is an expert in all aspects of adult cardiothoracic surgery, including ischemic heart disease, mitral valve repair, aortic aneurysm repair, septal myectomy for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and more. He's held leadership positions at hospitals across the country and is also credited with pioneering a procedure known as the Park Stitch, named for him in everything. More about that in a minute. Dr. Park completed residencies in thoracic surgery at the University of Minnesota and general surgery at the University of Washington. He earned his medical degree from the University of Chicago. Lots of snowy places, well prepared to continue life in Albany. You can give us a call, 800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Soon Park, welcome to Vox Pop. Thank you for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Of course. As we wait for listeners to flood the phones, they are home today and hopefully going to call in with their cardiovascular surgery questions. 800-348-2551. Let's get to know each other a little. How did you come to this specialty? Why did you decide to pursue this?
That's right. That's a good question. And then after I had interest in medicine, the family member of mine had a transplant, a kidney transplant, and that was a transformative so I thought it was a gift of life, and I wouldn't need to be in the field of transplantation. And then kidney transplant, liver transplant, and things like that. But eventually, when I felt comfortable with the concept of technical being able to transplant and other things like that, I thought it would be really exciting to be able to hold a heart and then see it pumping after transplant. So that actually was the reason that I pursued the surgical career. And then, heart surgery has been very fun and exciting. Yeah,
obviously, it's life or death when you're in there. How do you enter the OR with a sense of calm and knowledge that you're going to do your best and help someone?
That's right. I see.
How do you mentally prepare to touch a heart?
Well, I want you to know, Sarah, that walking into the studio was a little bit nervous experience.
You're doing great so far.
So, and I think, we get comfortable and then feel like we know what we're doing in the theater that we are in. So I think that's the case with the operating room. I think there's a lot that goes on beforehand because you get to meet the patients and then also decide, after going through all the appropriate workup they have gone through, you decide what's important problem that need to be fixed and how you're going to fix it. And so all those are pre-planned, way in advance. And then you assemble a team of people in the operating room. That includes nurses and also anesthesiologists and other people. And in heart surgery, since we have to work on heart, we have a special machine called heart-lung machine or cardiopulmonary bypass. So all those people are there to help you as a team. So as you walk into the OR, you have very familiar faces and other people and patients. You're well aware of patients' problem and what to do. And so it's not as nerve-wracking. But when you encounter something unexpected, then it could be very troublesome and things like that. But in general, you have your friends and a good team of people there.
I was looking at the list of cardiovascular things on the Albany Med site that you treat. It's obviously like a long list of things. I felt like I had a handle on a bunch of them, but I had never heard of, and I'm scared to ask, what is bacterial endocarditis?
Oh, I see.
It sounds scary.
No, that's right. It's a simple term, but we using medical terms, it sounds fascinating. So, or complicated. Bacterial means bacteria, right?
Yes.
We know about bacteria, and
endo, unfortunately, we all do. Yeah,
that's right. Endo means inside, and carditis means inflammation of the heart. So it means a inflammation of the heart or infection of the heart. that is related to bacteria. And so, you know, people with the infection in the bloodstream, the most common is because of, I shouldn't say most commonly, but one of the common reasons that people might have infection in the bloodstream is by injecting things into the bloodstream with unclean needles and things like that. Mm-hmm. So IV drug use is very common sometimes. And so when they inject things into the bloodstream, bacteria circulates with it, get injected, and then you could come into come in contact. Those bacteria could come in contact with the heart tissues, and then when there's some abnormality, especially, then it's more likely to get infected. So you start to form an infection in the heart valves, in particularly, and that could be very life-threatening. Not only local infection, but those bacteria could travel to the brain, give a stroke and bleeding, and or go to spleen or kidney. So it's a unfortunately. Disease that often is triggered by injecting bacteria into the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. Now, some people have it's a simple cut. Sometimes it trigger a bad infection in the bloodstream and things like that. But so it means infection in your bloodstream, mostly related to bacteria, and it becomes a life-threatening. So you need the medical attention right away.
And is the treatment surgical, or is it often antibiotics of a kind?
Yeah, often antibiotics in kind, so if it's early. But if it's a delayed in that there's enough growth of bacteria, then antibiotics don't penetrate into that. And then sometimes it's a you need a big surgery, but that could be really life-saving.
1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 to call Dr. Soon Park with your cardiovascular surgical questions. The email address again is voxpop@wamc.org. And before we go to our callers, Dr. Park, there is a stitch named for you. Could you tell us how did you develop your own?
Sure.
I want to point out to the listeners, he's making a very humble expression, but this is obviously incredibly impressive, and you've saved lives by coming across this. How is it applied, and how did you develop it?
Sure. I mean, it was a just a simple technique, and but you know, it's a complicated physiology. So when I was heavily involved with the transplant and heart-assisted device called ventricular assist device, we are creating a new physiology because a sick heart can't pump the blood out. So you would attach a device called left ventricular assist device that bypassed the heart function. And then you create a new situation where the aortic valve, which is a new valve that was being pressurized too much over time because it doesn't have a systolic diastolic phase in the heart. So anyway, so that normal valve was being subjected to excess pressure load over time because of this new physiology. And so we had to find a way to deal with that issue initially, and then also to make it durable over time. And aortic valve would become more and more incompetent over time. And and also we operate on these people. We have very little cardiac reserve, heart reserve, so we have to make surgery very expeditious. And then, so in order to deal with the aortic valve, instead of replacing it, it made things more complicated. Since the whole issue was that the coaptation was being taken away over time, so I thought by restoring the coaptation, meaning that having the aortic valve leaflets stay together, leaning on each other instead of being pulled apart, it might help. So I came up with a simple stitch called Park Stitch at the time. And in order to describe that, you say you put a stitch in the middle of the aortic valve involving all three leaflets. It was too complicated to describe. So I said, maybe this it'll make it simpler, so describe it. So I said Park Stitch in parentheses. And interestingly, about a decade and a half later, it became very popular, and then a lot of people are using the procedure. So that's there we go.
Yeah, incredible. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We do have a question in the email inbox. There's people on the phones too, but I'll do this email question, then we'll take a break and come back to the phones. This says, hi, Sarah. Hi, doctor. Decades ago, my older brother survived complete cardiac arrest through CPR and defibrillation and was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiopathy. All siblings were advised to have an echocardiogram to rule out the condition. I was cleared. Does this condition develop over time, and should I consider repeating the echocardiogram periodically?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this condition called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is probably under-recognized, underappreciated problem. And then you often hear about some of the athletes exert and all of a sudden collapses and dies or having trouble. So hypertrophic cardiomyopathy means a thickening of the heart muscle, and that creates it's all kind of problems. And then one of it could be have a many thickening of the heart involved many different parts, but one of the common more symptomatic, I mean, people, the pathology that gives them more symptoms is called obstructive cardiomyopathy. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy within it is an obstructive process. And then what that does is that that when heart ejects blood, it has to be ejected through an opening called left ventricular outflow tract, LVOT, and the muscle get thickened. And then as heart contracts to get the blood out, that portion get squeezed tighter. And then so that opening gets obliterated. Mm-hmm. And then create problems with the people passing out or dying suddenly. And the overall prevalence is about 1 in 500 to 1 in 200, as high as 1 in 200 in general populations. It's very common. Many of those people do not need special treatment, but should be followed. So if somebody has a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, it could be just spontaneous, but it could run in the family. That's all first-degree relatives should be screened. Now, sometimes the gene doesn't express itself until later, or the morphological change doesn't come about until later. So it seems to be reasonable to be screened on a regular basis. It makes sense.
Okay. Fran, your answer is, if you can swing it, get scanned again. Yeah. 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Soon Park is our guest on Medical Monday, and we will return after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff this afternoon. Hope everyone is staying warm and safely shoveling their snow so as not to need to visit Dr. Soon Park, our guest today on Medical Monday. You can support WAMC anytime at wamc.org. The lockbox is open, and we are hoping to shorten our upcoming drive by hearing from you. If you can afford to give, donate now, wamc.org. The phone number to call to speak with Dr. Soon Park is 800-348-2551. You can also email us, foxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Park, are you ready to go to the phones?
Sure.
All right. Your public awaits. Let's go to Mike in Clifton Park. Hello, Mike.
Hi there. About a year ago, I had a quadruple bypass, and I don't know whether I forgot or whatever, but the doctor that did the original scan told my wife that I would need either a 4 or 6 bypasses, quadruple or I guess whatever they call a 6-1. But how do they make the determination of which ones need to be done? And do you think they might have to go back later for another one?
No, I don't think so. No, that's right. I mean, so I would, somebody in general, not a surgeon, say you may need, 6 bypass, I think that gives you a general idea about extent of the disease, that you have a lot of disease, but it doesn't necessarily mean that in all or will be bypassed. So sometimes you say you got 3 vessel disease, but they end up coming with the 4, 5, 6 bypass grafts. So I wouldn't. There's no direct correlation between what they say versus what surgeons do, other than it gives a good idea that you probably had a pretty extensive disease. Okay, and then I would look at it like a tree trunk. In some sense, your heart blood vessels come with a major trunk, and then divide into smaller and smaller branches. And then really what's really important at the very small vessels that bring blood to the heart muscles, the cells. So when we typically do bypass surgery and things like that, We do that because of larger vessels are blocked or narrowed. Okay, so when you go around with the bypass, then you bring blood beyond that narrowed area, and then blood would travel. Just like having road construction, you bypass the road construction, and you bring blood to the area. And there are a number of things that goes into what vessel get bypassed and how it's bypassed and what location. But in general, the heart has three major blood vessel systems. I would say typically say heart is like a half a football sitting in your chest, and then there's one major vessel on top of the of like a football called LAD. And then one going on the left side called circumflex, and those are tied together as a left main, one vessel, left main giving LAD and circumflex. And there's another vessel coming on the right. So you have three blood vessel systems and with the branches. So when the surgeon look at your angiogram and finds the findings on your heart at the time of surgery, find the appropriate location. And also that vessel has to be free of heavy calcifications or things like that. Sometimes what you don't see on an angiogram, even though it's not narrow, that whole vessel, instead of being soft rubber-like, it becomes like a lead pipe or calcium calcified. So all those things go in. So I think surgeon have to incorporate the angiographic findings, which gives some roadmap, and then find those vessels on the heart and decide where it's appropriate and how many to do it. So I wouldn't be too worried about the number of vessels, they say one versus the other. So I think in general, when you get anywhere from, in general, depending on the disease, people will get anywhere from, even one to three to five. And they get not 100%, but 95-98% of blood supply is improved. So a very effective therapy, giving 10 to 15 years of relief in general. So I wouldn't worry about number of grafts.
The recovery is no fun, that's for sure.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Mike. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or voxpop at WAMC.org. Let's go now to Leslie in Cambridge, New York. Hello, Leslie.
Hi. Hello. Hello, Dr. Park.
Hi. How are you? Good afternoon.
I'm fine, thanks. I have a bicuspid aortic valve.
Sure.
Which I am having monitored. It was originally diagnosed as a prolapsed mitral valve. My first cardiologist said, oh, you're healthy, no problem. We just have to kind of keep an eye on it and make sure, it stays within acceptable ranges. And then he was deceased, and I am now going to a new super-duper cardiologist. So, and now I'm 10 years older. So, he says, I've always had, normal blood pressure and normal cholesterol. But I get really nervous when I go to him. So my blood pressure goes up. And so he's put me on blood pressure medicine and also cholesterol medicine, because he said that I do have some plaque, even though my cholesterol is in acceptable ranges. And I've never really needed to take much medicine, so it kind of makes me a little nervous. And I just wanted to get a perspective on the risks involved with the bicuspid aortic valve. And also I do get a CT scan, he's sort of been doing a baseline. So I've gotten one every about 7 or 8 months. And initially it was, a certain size, the diameter of the aortic opening, or I guess it's also called the aneurysm or something, pulmonary aneurysm or something like that. Is that right?
Okay, I see what you mean. Okay, I'll go through that. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. And so it was, a certain range, like 40-something. And each time I've gotten it, it's actually been measured as slightly smaller each time, which he says is basically not possible. It doesn't really get smaller, that it's just probably the angle of the shot or something like that, very certain variables, but it's within, it's still a range of 40-something. So I just wanted to see, get some perspective on it from another brain.
That sounds good. So do you mind sharing how young you are?
I am 71.
Good, very good. I mean, it sounds wonderful. Okay, so I think you mentioned three things in my mind. One is you start with the mitral valve prolapse, okay? And then that's how they started. Let's say it involves mitral valve, and when they say prolapse, when you could hear sometimes heart murmur, and the mitral valve, which is a opposite.
Right.
Since the heart is a simple muscle tube that squeezes, contracts, and relaxes to move the blood, you need to have two one-way valves working in conjunction to have blood going in proper direction. Otherwise, you will have a mixing of the blood.
Yeah.
So the mitral valve is the valve that let the blood come into your left ventricle from your lungs, okay? So when people have I hear heart murmur, and when they get echo, they realize that the mitral valve doesn't close properly. There's some poor coaptation.
I actually don't have that.
Okay.
They originally diagnosed it because of the swishy noise like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I had an echo cardiogram, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Good point.
Yeah.
So that when people hear a heart murmur, it says there's an abnormal turbulent flow. We don't know where it's coming from. Sometimes you could tell by listening carefully.
But
so I guess you started with when they heard heart murmur, they thought you might have mitral valve prolapse. It turns out you probably end up having aortic valve, bicuspid aortic valve, and turbulence from there. So about 1% to 2% of population. Now, this aortic valve is a different valve than mitral. So it's a valve that opens when heart ejects. And it sits inside of the biggest blood vessel called aorta, and it's right at the juncture. And then usually if you look at the aortic valve from the top, the way it's closed, it looks like a Mercedes sign. It's got three cusps. So it's usually three cusp valve. But about 1% to 2% of population are born with two cusps. It's called bicuspid aortic valve. Very common abnormality or common condition.
Which my twin sister has also.
Right. It runs in the family. And then some of the people with bicuspid aortic valve, they could sometimes last a very long time. But in general, we think it degenerates about a decade earlier than average normal tri-leaflet valve, okay? So typically they would either have a stenosis, meaning narrowing, or regurgitation, leaking, or a combination of those two, or sometimes it doesn't have any of those. And so in your case, I don't know what they thought you had a bicuspid aortic.
I have minor.
Stenosis or regurgitation? Leaky valve or
the regurgitation and stenosis.
I see. Got it. Okay, that's what it is. And then so people could have symptoms relate to that, and that alone, valve itself, either narrow or leaking. If it leaks or narrows a lot, then that could be indication to have it corrected surgically. Okay, but
meaning replaced.
Yeah, usually replaced. Right. Now, it seems like it's not giving you trouble right now. It's mild, which is you can live alone. But I would say, I don't know exactly the percentage. Let's say about a third of those people with the bicuspid aortic valve tend to have abnormal concomitant abnormality. That's ascending aortic aneurysm or aortic root aneurysm. So, the bicuspid valve itself is somewhat narrowed, but the biggest blood vessel in your body called aorta, ascending aorta, could be dilated.
Yes.
So that's what they're following with the CT scan. So it's not pulmonic valve, pulmonary artery, but aorta that's dilated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's like having a bulging on a tire. Even normal tire could go flat, but and you're bulging, then you might think that the tire is more weakened and you're worried about it. So that's why your cardiologist is rightly following you closely, and that's why he wants to have a blood pressure under good control, and then follow it on a regular basis. So in general, it could rupture at any time, but we think right now the general recommendation is that when it gets a certain size, maybe surgery, elective surgery is better than just, you know, taking the risk of rupture over time. And that size in general is about, you know, 5.5 centimeters. Sometimes you could index it with, the, you know, how big you are, how small you are, and things like that. But it has not been, you know, the universal good indexing to the body size and things like that in general. So we just use a recommendation about 5.5. Now, in healthy risk people, or if they have other problems, we know they have a like abnormal tissue makeup, like Marfan's or other connective tissue disorder, then we may want to recommend at an earlier age, earlier size. So more recent recommendation is that maybe it's reasonable to think about surgery if you are good risk of patient population down to about 5 centimeters, okay? And we tend to follow a lot of people with the abnormal aorta because scans get done very easily now, readily. So I think you're in the phase where we know it's abnormal, enlarged aneurysmal, but it hasn't met the size criteria. And so we watch them over time. And then, you know, some of them start to grow, then we do surgery. If it remains stable, you continue to follow, but the advice to keep the blood pressure under good control and things like that. And also, family history would be very important. If you have any family member who had a rupture of the aorta and things like that, then we are more likely to offer surgery or something like that.
Have that. So, I don't know. It's curious.
Yeah.
Leslie, but, are you an identical twin or fraternal twin?
No, we're fraternal.
Okay.
We're very, very different,
it's always,
actually.
Always the follow-up on a twin announced.
Yeah. our health. Stuff is all very different except for this.
So that makes
sense. All right, well,
does it make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a monitoring thing until something goes wrong.
No, I mean, it starts to get larger. I mean, it's a probability game in general. Yeah, all right.
Thank you for calling, Leslie.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure, have a great afternoon.
It makes me feel better.
Good.
You too. Thank you.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll go to Barbara in Queens. Hello, Barbara.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Yes. We're ready for your story.
Okay. Well, my mother had the mitral valve in 1947, and she was the second person cured of it in New York City. And her doctor was Dr. Marcus Kaftel, and he was determined he wasn't going to let her die because she had gone through so many different things, and she'd had rheumatic fever a lot of times. And so they brought in special penicillin for her, and my father had to go and get it, and they had to inject it like 3 times a day. There were 3 nurses that lived in the building we lived in, and they would do all the injections, and she came through it, and she was 83 when she died.
Wonderful. Yeah.
So I just thought, you know, that was a long time ago. But the minute I heard this on the phone, I never heard that again. You know, that wasn't something, I guess, I think Kennedy's son, one of his sons, had it too. So I just thought I would tell you, that's the story that I know about it. I remember them coming in, the doctors coming in, you know, people. I was about 6.
Wow.
It was like 1947, I think.
Wow.
I think it was 47.
Her heart was at the forefront of some of these solutions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was. He was. I mean,
he was the doctor.
Amazing.
Was.
Yeah, he was. He was determined she wasn't going to die. He had kept her alive through so many different things, and we were in New York.
Well, wonderful.
So just wanted you to know that.
Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you very
much. Barbara, have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, bye-bye.
Bye.
800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or voxpop@wamc.org. We'll take another call before our next break. Dr. Joyce Young in Brattleboro, hello. Joyce?
Hi, Dr. Park. I'm a naturopathic physician, and I'm really interested in heart failure. And I had read that viral infections were a major cause of heart failure. And I asked the head of heart failure at one of the big Boston hospitals a lecture to comment on that, and he indicated that that parvoviruses were involved, were majorly involved in heart failure. And I was wondering whether you could comment on the role of viruses and all different kinds of heart afflictions, including heart failure.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm a surgeon, so I'm not too sophisticated in that, but I'll try to tell you what I think I know. So heart failure is a, heart failure is a symptom related to heart not being able to pump the blood forward or maintain a reasonable pressure. So the heart failure could be due to many, many causes. So that it could be more, but most common cause in general is a what we call ischemic cardiomyopathy, meaning that people had a recurrent heart attacks or heart attacks, so they lost heart muscles and heart is unable to pump blood forward as well, and then they have a congestion, being short of breath and things like that. So ischemic cardiomyopathy is most common. Then there's also the second probably most common would be a, what we call idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy, meaning that we don't know what happened, but heart's not functioning very well. And then so within the part of idiopathic, some of the people may have what we call viral myocarditis. We don't know that for sure, but they had some flu-like or viral-like symptoms. Then and then heart got acutely sick, and then the heart never really fully recovered from there and things like that. So, you know, there are certain different types of viruses and things like that that could be. So if you could link it to a, it's rare that we could link the particular virus at time of infection, but if there are flu-like symptoms or things like that, we might say it could be the viral myocarditis and then cardiomyopathy. So there could be various different types of things that could happen. Also, other things that people often talk about is postpartum, meaning after pregnancy, heart have problems, and then bed rest was things like that. So whatever that make the heart fail, it could be transient with the support while somebody's heart failure by supporting them. Heart is able to recover itself sometimes. And then, when you say viral, sometimes a particular strain of virus or things like that could cause heart to be dysfunctional. We don't know exact mechanism, but they have heart failure. And other times that, since you have the physician, that I would say, other things is that, you know, that now what I talked about is causes. And then the other one is a heart failure related to, is a poor heart function? Or is it that heart function, contraction is fine, but because of high filling pressure, so it's a, so you could say, reduced ejection fraction versus preserved ejection fraction heart failure. So there could be many different ways to do that. So heart failure is like a common term that describes people being short of breath or unable to circulate blood forward, or both. And then you could go into what's the etiology, is it correctable, and things like that.
Thank you for calling, Choice. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Surgical Director of Cardiovascular Services at Albany Medical Center, Dr. Soon Park, is our guest on Medical Monday, and we'll be back with the final segment of today's show after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It is Medical Monday. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff, reminding you can support WAMC anytime at wamc.org. It's quick and easy to do. The phone number to call Vox Pop, though, is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Dr. Soon Park is our guest. He's the Surgical Director of Cardiovascular Services at Albany Medical Center. Dr. Park, are you ready to go back to the phones?
Sure.
All right, let's go now to Pete in Sheffield. Hello, Pete.
Hi, doctor, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good, I can't hear you too well, so.
I'll try to speak up. Is it me?
Anyhow, I'm one of the early recipients of the Ross procedure, and I'm wondering why they don't do it anymore. I had it done about almost more than 30 years ago.
Before you say why they don't do it anymore, tell us who've not had it what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to try putting you on speakerphone to see if I can hear you any better. Is that all right?
Sure.
But Dr. Park, you can tell us what it was or is.
Go ahead. So but you know that's fantastic. How old were you when you had the last procedure, and how old are you now?
I was right on the edge. I was like 47.
Okay.
I'm turning 81 next
Wonderful.
Week.
Yeah. And then what was the indication for your surgery at the time at 41?
Oh, I had a heart murmur that drew a crowd. It was amazing.
I see. And then any subsequent surgeries after Ross procedure, or just that was it? You've been fine.
Any what?
Any subsequent procedures did you need? Or you've been
any other surgeries?
No, I've been pretty good up until until I hit around 70.
Yeah, no.
And I have a cow valve in now, and actually, a trip with congestive heart failure and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Go ahead.
Why don't they do the operation anymore?
They still do it. I think it's what's the indication, and then what's the risk and all that. I think those are I'm glad to hear from you that you had it done 30 some years ago and doing great.
It's pretty amazing. And two things. First of all, I've seen on some of the X-ray or whatever you call them things. You can still see the old sutures in there, the old sew marks.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one. And number two, do you know how I chose the surgeon?
No.
I asked the guy if he could juggle. And lo and behold, I threw him two oranges, and he was able to juggle with two of them. That was it.
Great, great, great. Don't test me with that question. No. So I think you did great. But Ross procedure is a clear. There's a very well, good group of people that's well, well indicated. So Ross procedure.
Well, I think it was for younger people originally. And that was one of the things.
Right. And the Ross procedure is a technically more complicated. That what you do is that you take your pulmonary artery. There's an aorta.
It's an autograft and a homograft. Yeah. I know what it is.
Yeah, I'm going through that not because you know a lot because you read about it, but other people don't.
The listeners. Yeah.
So that there's a similar structure called pulmonic valve on the right side that pumps the blood into the lung that area. So you take that valve and structure out. And replace the aorta, put it in the aortic position, and then you do something else with the pulmonic valve. So it's a almost auto transplant, and so it's much more technically difficult. And then you've done very well, but it's because of more complicated things. The people at the incidence of coming back for reoperation on the homograft, the autograft, is not a trivial. And then you also have problems with the homograft on the pulmonic side. So that's something that you put on the lung side because you borrow that tissue, and that requires repeated intervention. So I'm glad that you
done. Everyone, oddly enough, is holding up very well.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did well. But in pediatric population where the growth is a real issue, and then we don't have the good things, it's a very good thing to do. And I think you've done very well, but. In general, we don't need to make surgery more complicated and things like that. So if there's an appropriate indication, I think it's very much it should be done. And I'm not sure. Other times you could convert one simple problem that could be fixed to two difficult problems. So you can't argue with the success in your case, and you got very lucky, and you've done very well. But, other people, there are many examples where they're not so lucky and have more issues. So I think, when you win a lottery ticket, not everybody gets a lottery ticket becomes a winner. So congratulations. Good job. And you picked the surgeon well.
Thank you. We learned to juggle.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Pete.
Okay. Goodbye. Thanks.
Right. Of course. 800-348-2551. Go now to Beverly in Saratoga. Hello, Beverly.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Well, I just want to say, Dr. Park, it's really wonderful to hear your reassuring and calming voice. in September 2023, you operated on an unusual situation where through a transesophageal echocardiogram, Dr. Baran in Saratoga noticed that there was a tumor of some sort on my mitral valve.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be a tumor of calcium, pure calcium. And you, with care and patience, saved my valve and took off the tumor. I'm doing very well. And my question to you, besides wanting to say thank you publicly, is, you know, I've met a couple other people who have had this strange deposit of calcium on their mitral valve, and there have been different ways that they've had it taken care of, but does the research show anything new since 2 years ago? Because nobody seems to know why the calcium deposits itself there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for not embarrassing me. And then also, I'm glad you're doing well. And I think I remember, but not too much details.
I'm the mandolin player.
I do. Oh yeah, of course I do know that. That's right. So yeah, that's right. No, and then I remember you and your husband playing mandolin, right? At the hospital, I was so amazed. I was standing there. Wasn't that the case, right? Wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yes, okay. And then, that's right, and your daughter is a physician, right?
Yes.
So, good. Yes. Now I remember. Good.
There you go.
Good. So,
Adrian, right.
That's right. My best regards to all of you. And good. Thanks for
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, I mean, yours is unusual, and I don't remember echo details and things like that, but so it's a calcium. So what body does is that when there's a abnormal process or things like that, they tend to go through a calcific process, meaning that calcium comes in, get deposited, and usually hardens. But during that process, sometimes it's a go through liquid phase called so instead of being a calcium deposit being solid, it's more like mud. With the necrotic tissues and calcium in it. So I think during that phase, in your case, we're able to see the things. Again, I think I admitted to you at the time, also, it's usually unusual. We don't see that much. So it could be some other tumor, but it ended up being calcium. So some liquefied calcium. So we're able to debride that, and I think we saved your valve. I think
she did say
yes,
that.
Yeah,
she did.
Yeah. So, and then if you're doing well, and you had a good outcome because you kept your valve and doing well. So, I think sometimes you see unusual, strange things. Like the gentleman before thought, Ross is great. Not everybody that lucky. In fact, most people are not. So, but in your case, it was unusual. I've done a lot of mitral valve surgeries, but at the time, I think Clear said, I don't know what's going on with this, but we will still do what we can, and it worked out well. So I think, some unusual, strange things happens, and we deal with it as we see them.
Right, but you haven't heard of any reason why that developed.
No, I mean it's a general, reaction to the things, but nothing new that I know of. And then I think it's just a different phase and different things. Sometimes you see, really unusual things, but it happens. So that's that. I guess it happens.
Right. Well, thank you very much. It's good to talk with you again. Yeah. And take care.
Thanks
for listening and for calling, Beverly.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. All righty. Oh, it's going to be tight. Let's try to fit in one more. We'll go to, Mary in Beacon. Mary, can you pose your question relatively speedily? Oh, not off to a good start. Mary, hello?
Hello, I'm Mary.
Great. You are on the air with Dr. Park. Ask your question quickly, please.
I think I could have used the whole hour. Dr. Park, I hope you have an office near Wappingers Falls or Poughkeepsie. I hope you do.
He's in Albany, Albany Medical Center.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, so that's you don't have an office down here where I live near Poughkeepsie.
No.
Okay, Doctor, about 20 years ago, maybe more, I had heartbeat of 200 beats per minute. And when I went to my general practitioner, He said maybe I have Marfan syndrome, but he didn't really elaborate, and the condition never got anywhere. It's never bad, never was bad, so I didn't pursue it, and it was over 25 years ago. But then 2 years ago, I had a stroke, and it was in my brain, and I had two scars left from it, and they really didn't explain why I had them. But they have been, you know, looking into it with tests, and I have a little Zio from iRhythm to put on to like a halter monitor, but it's smaller. It sticks to my skin, and it's supposed to measure my heart rhythm, whether it's synchronization, if it's synchronized or not, or too fast or too slow or something like that. And none of my GP at the present moment doesn't think I have a heart condition. But what the problem is, unless I rule that out, I can't have further operations. I have to have something for my knees. I can't walk. And I have crowded nerves in my spinal column from an accident I had as a child that has come back, because as I'm getting older, my arthritis is kicking in. It's part of my family history. And I don't know how related all this stuff is, so I'm really, I guess I'm asking you to be the Sherlock Holmes of my day today to sort of figure out for me if this stuff is related or maybe is not. I don't know where to go anymore. I've gone to see a different...
Okay, Mary, we need to let the doctor answer. Thank you.
So I don't know, but I think I would go to see a cardiologist. They'd be able to sort out whether there's any condition in your heart that will prevent you from pursuing other surgeries. It's called pre-op clearance, and they'll be able to look at your cardiac risk and other things. So that's what, I mean, it seems like you're doing the right thing, and just go see a cardiologist that your primary care physician could work with, and then see what the assessment is, okay? It's complicated.
Okay, thank you, doctor. You don't think crowded nerves has anything to do with the stroke, and I might not have another one, I hope.
I mean, it could be, but it could be due to other things as well, and atrial fibrillation and things like that. That's why they're working you up. So it's not that simple, and you need to find a cardiologist to look at you extensively, okay?
Right. Thank you, doctor. Thank you
for listening and for calling, Mary. We appreciate it. Dr. Park, thank you for being here. We're wrapping up now. You were fantastic. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed. Okay.
And thank you for digging out and coming in on the snow day.
You're welcome.
Doubly appreciated.
Yeah.
We are just about out of time, but we want to thank everyone who called in. I apologize to the people we left on the line. And I again would like to thank Dr. Soon Park of Albany Med for joining us today. A reminder, you can support WAMC anytime online at WAMC.org. That's WAMC.org. We are in the lockbox portion of our fundraising right now and hoping to keep the drive short. The full drive kicks off Monday morning. That's Groundhog Day, February 2nd at 6 a.m. But until then, you can help shorten the drive by giving us support now. Thank you for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Our Jess O'Rourke took your calls. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff. Support for Vox Pop comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a life plan community at the foot of the Schwangunks near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. Future residency waitlist available, woodlandpondnp.org. Tomorrow, we'll talk about antiques with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. That's tomorrow on Vox Pop at 2 p.m. Keep those pledges coming and filling the lockbox if you would be so dear as to do that, everybody. It's WAMC.org. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge.